and welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast number 334. On the way, we'll look at all the international action involving Norwich City players so far, discuss Nelson Oliveira's future, and turn our attentions to Saturday's game against Middlesbrough. I'm David Freezer, and joining us here at Archon Towers, we have Deputy Head of Sport Mark Armstrong and our Chief Norwich City correspondent Paddy Davitt. How are we doing, chaps?
Very well, dear. Very well.
Yeah, we're all good here, thank you. Yeah.
Excellent. Right, well, we'll kick off with internationals, and the main man who jumps out is Teemu Pukki, of course, who scored a rather tidy goal at the weekend, didn't he? 1-0 win for Finland in this UEFA Nations League, which you guys tell me is sort of competitive.
You just described them as friendlies, Dave.
I thought they were still friendlies, but apparently they are actually competitive. But there we go, a goal against Hungary, that's not bad going at all, is it?
No, don't ask me to describe it, though. I think we have to make an admission here, DF, that none of us have really seen any of the international football, so I can't break you down what the goal was.
It was a feast of football, Paddy. Now, he went down the right wing, good pace, and then cut across his man, who I guess sort of pulled out of the tackle thinking he's going to concede a penalty. And from that point on, he has it on his left foot and is able to fire under the keeper. So a very tidy goal.
Fair enough. Having said that, though, maybe a little bit, well, not so much tenuous, but a former player of the parish. And I did see most of that game when my head wasn't buried in a laptop. But, you know, we haven't recorded one since last Thursday. And Carr Road hosting the 21s, England-Dutch 0-0. Pretty, well, weren't a bad game. Obviously, they could have done with a bit more in terms of the goals. But
0-0, wasn't it?
It was, but clearly we were down there, as were quite a few in the 16,500 who turned up to see Mr. Madison. Played 75 minutes or so, came off to a lovely ovation, and it was just a nice evening, not in weather terms, obviously, because it was pretty ropey with the rain, but in terms of a guy there who, both in terms of what he brought football-wise and financially last season, superb, and he didn't really get the Wes Hoolan type send-off, so it did feel it was a bit of a long overdue thanks for everything you did, and he felt that as well. We spoke to him, you spoke to him before the game, I spoke to him after the game, and he was genuinely touched, him and his family, very proud, and it clearly is a club that is dear to his heart. So yeah, we're talking internationals, and yeah, okay, the focus is on Daniel Farke's current players, but you know, not to overlook that was a nice way for Norwich fans to say goodbye. Sadly, not so much for Angus Gunn, who was on the bench. But that said, there was a nice piece. We had it on the Pinken.com over the weekend from him, taken from the England programme that night, where he, again, very clear, nailed his colours to the mast. He's Norwich born and bred. And it's always nice to come back. And I like the line that he realised now, probably having played last season, that how highly his dad is held in affection. And he would like to feel that whenever he comes back, he gets a bit of that as well. And I think most fans who saw him last season would feel that is the case. You know, it's they're nice, positive stories. Two lads who, sadly, given where Norwich are now, they outgrew Norwich. Gunn, slightly different because he was obviously only on loan at Man City. But both of those really were Premier League quality players now, and Norwich for the foreseeable are not there. So, yeah, a bittersweet, but still a nice moment for those lads and the fans.
Yeah, lovely narrative to it all. In terms of Angus Martin, he's obviously had this £13 million move to Southampton and then has seen that Manchester City could have done with a number two, with Bravo doing his knee ligaments. So do you think he's maybe made the wrong call there? It's always difficult as a keeper, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's probably a bit early to say at the moment. And I think when he would have signed for Southampton, he would have known that he was competing with McCarthy, wouldn't he? So I think it's just a bit early to say, yeah. And ultimately, I still think that Man City have got the wherewithal to just go out and pay another 30, 40 million for another keeper, haven't they? So I think in terms of Premier League prospects, I think he's still better served to go into a club like Southampton. And you know, Southampton are getting a good deal in that. How much they pay?
13.5, I think it was. Because Man City actually unusually put the fee out there. And I think they've got a buyback in there as well.
So I mean, if they pay 13.5 million and it inspires McCarthy to be a brilliant keeper, that's 13.5 million well spent. Or if McCarthy makes a mistake, then he knows Angus is snapping at his heels to come back in, which, judging from what he did last season at Norwich, he's more than capable of probably competing at that level. I still think he'll get games. Southampton, there's plenty there's plenty of competitions then to play, and obviously they've got the League Cup and there'll be the FA Cup, and you know, as I say, I can't see McCarthy's a young keeper as well. I can't see him being a really, really consistent keeper, won't make any sort of mistakes at all. I can see Angus getting in there at some point.
Well, Dean Henderson got the gloves. Bit of a statement from Eddie Boothroyd, I suppose, saying that he's the guy who's playing regularly in the Championship now. Angus, you've got to get some action, or they're his gloves for the time being. Similarly, in goalkeeping terms, Michael McGovern, obviously very much number two to Tim Krul here, and looks like he's lost his number one place for Northern Ireland in a similar situation. Bailey Peacock-Farrell has emerged as Leeds number one this year, and with England sniffing around as well, they very quickly got him in their team, and Northern Ireland lost 2-1 to Bosnia in Belfast. Jamal Lewis did play all of that 90 minutes at left back, but for McGovern, his career is kind of is off the boil now. It must be rather worrying for him.
Well, yeah, definitely. But the parallel is obvious. You touched on Angus Gurney. Last season, he's firmly England under-21's number one because he's played 51 games or whatever and played very well for Norwich. This season, I think he's had one League Cup outing, and it's not enough. You know, if you're an international manager, you want players who are in form and playing for their club sides. And to bring that back to McGovern, he's competing with a guy who's basically in goal for Leeds, who, as painfully we saw at Carrow Road the other day, are certainly the top side in the Championship at the minute, and he's a key part of that. I think he's had something like four clean sheets in those six league games. So I don't think even the most one-eyed Norwich fan would argue that probably McGovern, given his, well, League Cup outings aside, he's firmly playing second fiddle to Krul and Michael. That's, you know, we'll get on to another guy who maybe needs to make decisions about his own career path at Norwich and the value of playing rather than sitting, well, wherever. But for McGovern, he's now into the final 12 months of his Norwich deal. His career has stalled in terms of playing time. I'm sure, obviously, earned a lot more money than he was on Hamilton when he came down from Scotland. So that's fine, but I think it's fair to say the way Norwich are moving forward now in terms of their player recruitment and the evolution of squads that he's not going to get a new deal here. So even at this early stage of the proceedings, you know, he needs to start thinking about, well, I need to now find myself probably another club in next summer. I need to be playing. And that doesn't help his cause, yeah, because what was happening before the emergence of Peacock-Farrell, certainly for Northern Ireland, was even when he wasn't, you know, when it was Angus Gunn last season or Tim Krul this, but Angus Gunn last season, he would go off and still be Ireland, Northern Ireland's number one, so he still had that window, really, to go and show what he was all about. And sadly, with the emergence of this guy at Leeds, that isn't the case. So, yeah, he's probably just reaffirming to him, I would imagine, but he must already know that he really needs to get his career going again.
He's a lot closer to the Norwich first team this season than he was last, though, isn't he, really? In that last season, we had Angus in goal, who barely made a mistake until sort of later on in the season, whereas that's not the case with Tim Krul, and there's still a bit of uncertainty around Krul as well in terms of whether he can get back to the keeper that he was in the past. If he does, Norwich have had an absolute steal, and McGovern will never get anywhere near it, but from what we've seen so far, he's got a bit of work to do to get back to that level. And if he does continue to make mistakes, then McGovern's shown he's more than capable to come in, and he's a safe pair of hands, pardon the pun, but he will go in and do a job for Norwich. And if Krul does completely lose his confidence, then Norwich have got a keeper who they're paying decent money for, who they can call upon.
Yeah, and Daniel Farker spoke very highly of Michael, in particularly his attitude around the place and his influence on the squad. So you know, if we're to take that at his word, then, you know, he's happy to use Michael if possible. But I suppose the other side of that we can take, I mentioned it in my column on Saturday, is Remy Matthews, in that, you know, he's now sat at Bolton as number two, and Ben Anik has just, he didn't win it, but he was nominated for Championship Player of the Month, so he's very much stuck there. Maybe Remy would have been better sticking around and trying his luck here. Maybe that wasn't an option for him. Maybe they, you know, told him that he had to go, but he may well have got a chance if he'd have stuck around.
Yeah, and I guess what we're talking about with Remy, certainly with Angus as well, is it's the hindsight. It is a wonderful thing, isn't it? Who could have foreseen certainly Krul coming in and, as Mark rightly says, not exactly looking the most secure last line of defence? I think if you're Remy Matthews, we'll now go back to the summer, you're Remy Matthews, you haven't really grasped the opportunity that was there for him and Michael McGovern to a lesser extent, but certainly Remy, start of the summer, Norwich's top brass wanted him to emerge as the number one and really put his stamp on it. That didn't happen. Not all down to Remy, but certainly a large part of that equation. Then he sees Krull parachuted in and being told this is going to be our number one. If you're Remy, quite rightly at that point, you think, well, I don't really want to go back and play the odd development game. So, you know, a championship club comes in for him. He probably backs his ability to fight it out with Anik far more evenly than he would have done against Krull here. So, you know, early days really, isn't it? But right here, right now, has he moved his career forward? You say no, but, you know, loss of form or heaven forbid, injury to Anik, Remy gets in and then the window is there for him. So, which I don't think would have happened here. I think really they made their decision when they brought Krull in that Krull was going to be the number one come what may. Yeah. And even though he has, yeah, we know the high profile errors he's made, but I still think it'd have to be a run of those type of for him to actually be pulled out of the firing line. I think clearly they have nailed their colours to the mast to the extent where they were quite willing to let Remy go. And that in itself is a statement, isn't it? So, yeah, unless Tim Krull completely unravels in terms of the confidence factor, then I think he will continue to be Norwich's number one, yeah.
Yeah, the longer he stays fit, hopefully we'll start to see the best of him. Still early days, of course. And we mentioned Timo Pukki. You know, I think that's 4 goals in 8 games. He's made a good start to things. Just to wrap up the internationals, then Tim Klose was unused for Switzerland as they beat Iceland 6-0. This is all this UEFA Nations League competitive friendlies rubbish. But you know, it's football at the end of the day. There was a bit of action with young lads as well. Adam Ida, for instance, with the Republic of Ireland under-19s. But there's a full wrap of that at pinken.com. As we sit here recording, it's Monday. Potentially, Max Aarons could be getting his England under-19 debut this evening. They've got a friendly in Belgium. And then there's a few more games Tuesday night. Tim Klose will be hoping, I'm sure, particularly for this game, there's a friendly against England in Leicester. So if he could be involved in that, he'd obviously be very chuffed. Finland play Estonia, and Northern Ireland have got a friendly against Israel. So plenty going on, even though there's no Norwich game, of course. But there was a bit of action at Carrow Road on Saturday. There was an open training session and signing session, which is always a good idea. It gives fans the opportunity to get a bit closer to the players and stuff. And as we could see, Nelson Oliveira definitely in amongst it. You know, we now know that he's here until January, that he potentially is going to have to be reintegrated into the squad. But he was definitely there, wasn't he? Definitely training with the squad.
Saw him with my own eyes, yeah. No, my godson was staying with me and he was more interested in Captain Canary than the players, to be fair.
And then we were. Canary's had as much action as Nelson Oliveira.
Well, you said it. There's plenty of jokes to be made there. Although he was calling him Captain Fairy, he couldn't quite get his head around Canary. But Nelson was there. Yeah, I mean, there was only, I think I counted in the region about 14 players. So, you know, it was a very gentle, more of a PR exercise, clearly. Hanley was there, despite, you know, I think Daniel told me potentially he was on standby with Scotland, but clearly he's not gone. So. But yeah, that was, yeah, you're right, Dave. Yeah, that was definitely the most eye-catching element, because there has been, I mean, we've done quite a few now, podcasts / Facebook Lives / we're doing a Q&A Monday lunchtime, and since the window effectively closed around Europe and Nelson Oliveira remained here, then that to me is, going into Middlesbrough this coming weekend, the major talking point around Norwich. Do you reintegrate him? So there was a visible sign as he trained with the rest of his teammates who were on duty, that under the watchful eye of Mr. Farker, that you know, he's certainly in the mix. So, you know, we will find out a little bit more from Daniel himself when we get to speak to him towards the end of the week pre-Borough. But yeah, to labour the point, we've pretty much done this topic to death now. So. What needs to happen moving forward? Whose interest is it in to have a situation where you've got a playing asset who clearly has footballing ability? Maybe there's a temperamental question mark against him, but is there now until January, come what may? So, you know, the situation as it was has changed now, you know, pre-deadline. If it was in both parties' interest to move on, that hasn't happened. you'd like to think now there's a sense of realism around it, and how can we get a win-win situation, good for the player, good for the football club. And it'll be interesting to hear Daniel Schwartz on that later in the week. But yeah, as it stands, Nelson Oliveira is available for Middlesbrough.
He is, and he looked very smiley as from what I could see in the photos, and he's popped up on a few of the players' Instagrams and stuff in recent days. Could be reading too much into that, but again, he looked like he was very much part of the group, and I don't think anyone's ever levelled it at Nelson that he's not a nice bloke. I mean, I've interviewed him a few times myself, and he comes across as quite friendly, but clearly he's capable of a bit of a strop on the pitch. In terms of, I mean, Norwich have now got 7 games coming up in 3 weeks, kicking off with Borough at home on Saturday, and would you agree, Mark, that there's no chance we'll see him against Borough? But just that Wickham game is on the back burner, that if we're going to see Nelson anytime soon, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
That would make sense to bring him in there. It completely depends on what the relationship's like between Farker and Oliveira. I would suggest that things have improved if he's around the squad on an open day. He obviously trusts him enough to be around that. It doesn't do anyone any favours whatsoever to have a player of Nelson Oliveira's ability just on the sidelines doing absolutely nothing. Norwich are paying him to do nothing. Nelson Oliveira isn't furthering his career just by sitting in the stands. He's maybe had a bit of a reality check that, you know, that the Swanseas of this world or whoever aren't going to come in and offer 12 million to take him away from Norwich. The only way, if he wants to get out of Norwich, then he needs to make his peace with Farker, get playing and show what he can do. And we've seen what he can do in the past. Unfortunately, we didn't see it last season. He was pretty awful, wasn't he, at times, and didn't seem interested. He was just waiting for his move, but that hasn't happened. Norwich still need to find a bit of a cutting edge, whether that's not just on the striker, that they need to find someone who's going to get those goals for them. I'd hoped it would be Jordan Rhodes. It still could be Jordan Rhodes. They've got Dennis Sabeni as well. But Oliveira, throw him into the mix, it livens things up a bit, doesn't it? You'd hope it either Oliveira may get scoring, or it might get Rhodes or Sabeni scoring, who knows. But he needs to be reintegrated, and I would suggest that if he's at an open day, then that's started to happen.
Yeah, who knows? They could even play 2 strikers up front one
craziness
day.
Craziness.
Craziness, like a 4-4-2 maybe? That's a pretty novel formation, isn't it? Okay, I think we can wrap part one there. Just before we get stuck into the rest of the pod, remember you can get in touch with us all here to share your thoughts and set the agenda. Just send an email to thepinken@archant.co.uk, or get in touch via all the possible social media channels, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We're all out there. I'm sure you can find us. And make sure you don't miss a single podcast this summer and through the season by subscribing. You can find all the details at pinken.com/podcast. Right, let's quickly move on to our gongs of the week. I'm not going to be too many contenders for these ones, but these are the ones that Mr. Bailey has come up with, and we're gonna stick with them for the season. So we've got the big Duncan Forbes for Hero of the Week, the Kevin Muscat for Villain of the Week, and the Simeon Jackson Moment of the Week. If we start with the Moment of the Week, I think it's probably got to be Madison's reception, isn't it? It sounds like it was a nice moment at Carrow Road, you know, really. One that's probably what people went there for, wasn't it? Just when he got substituted with, what, 15 minutes to go?
Yeah, 76, I think he came off. Well, it was 3 parts. There was when his name was read out just before kickoff. That was a very big cheer. And then there was the standing ovation, not quite in the Wes. I mean, it was raining, but I don't think there was too much crying going on from Madison in the same way it was with Wes against Leeds at back end of last season. And then
uncontrollable crying.
Yeah, that was big. That was big tears. But and then at the final whistle, there was basically a lap of appreciation, I think, from the England players. Now that might be sort of a contrived stage managed thing they do whenever they go around the country with the 21s, but obviously Madison in front of the Barclay again was rapturously acknowledged and he reciprocated. So yeah, definitely, if there's a one moment of a week where Norwich aren't playing, then that would definitely be it for me.
Okay,
that's a bit of a side issue. It's been mentioned that obviously Englanders are still struggling for this creative player that can hold on to the ball. You boys have seen Madison a lot more than I have. How far away is he, do you think, from making that step up to England? I know Boothroyd said he's not ready, I think, last week. How far away do you think he is from making that step up? And do you think he could be that answer for England?
It's quite noticeable that, I mean, Boothroyd literally said he's not ready yet, didn't he? It was almost a bit noticeable that they maybe were just knocking down the hype about Maddison a little bit last week. We've since seen Ben Chilwell and Damari Gray, who are of course his Leicester teammates now, called up to the senior squad for this friendly against Switzerland. Friendly?
Yeah, that is a friendly, isn't it?
They're all sort of friendlies. You know, as far as what I think England need is more, you're more looking for a Pirlo, but isn't everyone an Andrea Pirlo? Maddison isn't your deep sitting player who's going to set the tempo, as far as I'm concerned. And when you've got Dele Alli and Jesse Lingard already there, I'm not sure that he's quite the man. Although I think he will get in there eventually, just because he's got so much talent. But maybe he's just going to have to wait for another year or so. But I think that's all right, to be honest. I think he does need the game time in the Prem if he's going to develop, because he's not. You know, he's not an international class footballer yet. I think we just think he could be, don't we?
Absolutely. No, he's played how many games? Not even double figures in the Premier League. So it would be very, very premature to pull him into the England setup for me. On that point, in terms of where he played for England, the other night he played on the left-hand side, nominally, of a 4-3-3, and he was the left on the top row, as Farker likes to call it.
He played on the left.
He did play on the left, but nominally.
That sounds like AD Boothroyd.
Nominally, yeah, but he was then switching, interacting with Chilwell, going over the outside of him, and then Damari Gray flipping flanks, and he was coming inside a lot as well. So it looked like there was quite a degree of freedom, flexibility, but he didn't like it when I put it to him, because Boothroyd had said after the game, actually, that he felt Maddison was trying too hard because of the occasion. And, you know, when I put that to Maddison, he really didn't like that. So I don't think they're exactly on the same page when it comes to football philosophy. That would be my reading in that situation. So maybe that's some of the Boothroyd type of comments. But I think what he says stands. I don't think he is ready for the seniors, and he will need to have a really good season playing regularly for Leicester and really, really putting his stamp on Premier League games before I think you parachute him into the senior cell.
Well, the piece that I had with him talking about the influence Daniel Farker had on his career last season, and he said that the gist of it was basically that Farker gave him the trust. He treated him as a first-team player, didn't treat him like a young player, which I guess could almost be a little bit of a backhanded swipe at Alex Neil. But also, to be fair to Farker, he played him in his best position consistently, didn't he? And he did trust him to play him all the time. He could see that raw talent was there, and he did get the best out of him. So, you know, AD Boothroyd playing him in it's sort of a vague left position. That's exactly what happened. That's typical of the England setup, isn't it? You get a player come through the system, and then they go and play them in a strange position when they actually come to their big moment.
Yeah, I mean that might do him some good though in the long run, because ultimately, are England going to build their side around James Maddison? Might do, but he's got to do a hell of a lot of work to do that. So to be a bit more versatile and come in off the flank there might do him some good in the long run.
Okay. In terms of the big Duncan Forbes hero of the week, then I think we've just got to go for Teemu Pukki. Lovely goal. Looking at his international history, I don't think he's scored against a higher sort of calibre opponent than Hungary. I remember when he signed thinking, oh, I wonder who scored those 12 international goals against, and they were against the Faroes and Iceland and things like that. So,
Iceland beat England, mate.
They certainly did, with a long throw from a Cardiff player that was pinpointed by Lee Dixon ahead of kickoff on ITV, yet Roy Hodgson didn't seem to be aware of it. So unless there's any other nominations for Hero of the Week, I think Pukki can claim that one. And Muscat Villain of the Week,
Boothroyd
for leaving out Gunn.
Spot on.
Yeah, you could say David De Gea.
A bit bitter about that, Paddy.
Yeah,
you were looking forward to seeing that, because I suppose that did take away the narrative.
It's not on a personal level, no. More from a work point of view, as in what am I doing down in? But Angus probably thinking the same. I don't know if anybody's seen Paul Chesterton's image of him sat on the bench, tucked in on that back row. So he's looks like he's in a bus shelter. He does not look happy.
No, he did not. Actually, I think you can put Marcus Rashford in this, because I didn't watch the England game live, but I saw the highlights, and the chance towards the end when he did brilliantly and set himself, literally pretty much gave himself a penalty. It was him versus the keeper from like 12 yards, and somehow he managed to shoot straight at De Gea. I mean, if that doesn't sum Marcus Rashford up, then I don't know what does. But yeah, we'll give that one to AD Boothroyd, and I think it's probably time to start looking ahead to Saturday's game. Borough at home. Clearly, Borough started the season very well. Tony Pulis has got some serious resource. You look at that squad and there's some real quality in there. Of course, two former Norwich players coming back here in Johnny House and Danny Ayala. They're joint top with Leeds at the moment. They only conceded two goals. Doesn't get much more difficult than that, does it?
No, it really doesn't. I think it's a good fixture for Norwich, bizarrely, because they've got a kick start their season now. They obviously came back in the derby to get a 1-1 draw. They need to a result against Middlesbrough would be the perfect launch pad to really kick on this second phase of the Championship season. And you know, maybe the international break didn't quite come at the right time for Middlesbrough, obviously, as you mentioned, in second place, in decent form. Hopefully it might have interrupted a bit of rhythm for them, and Norwich can capitalise on that. I mean, the slight worry about that is that Norwich are going to have to really sharpen up at the back. And, you know, it's conceding only two goals. It sounds like they're going to have their work cut out carving that defence open as well. I'm interested, though, to see how Housen performs as well, because is it fair to say he's not quite had the sort of impact that many people might have expected at Middlesbrough?
I don't think he did last season, but I think the start of this season he seems to have been more involved in things, doesn't he?
Yeah, it looks that way from afar. I think I think he needed to convince Pulis, because I recall watching the playoff semis against Villa and he was the one getting hooked, basically. So, you know, in a huge game like that, in terms of Pulis's thoughts, he wasn't really... We're talking about Madison and England for the seniors. Not sure Johnny Housen was in his first 11, but he does seem to be this time round. And even Johnny Housen, being an experienced player, he would have still needed that period, I'm sure, to adapt, particularly when a new manager's come in, because he was signed by Gary Monk, wasn't he, for the Teesiders. So, yeah, but that would concern me, to be fair, if Johnny Housen is now firmly in the mix. His reunion or return last year passed without any incident, but that wouldn't be good if Johnny Housen is slotting goals on Saturday. But to take Mark's point, it isn't the three fixtures thereafter in the league, which are definitely games where Norwich, there will be no leeway from their fan base. Wigan's, QPR's and Reading's, not in that order, but they're the three games that I think will define this mini phase between this international break and the next one. Middlesbrough is not a free hit, because it's obviously a Carrow Road home game, and they do need to certainly not implode as they did so graphically against Leeds. I mean, that was almost a white flag job towards the end. So when another one of those, and I think it could get a bit spicy. But even the wrong side of a really good performance, looking a lot more solid at the back and carrying a threat up front, I think that would roll them into what for me are the more important trio of games in coming up.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I'll rattle through them. It's seven games in 3 weeks. There's a midweek game every week. Borough at home Saturday. That's followed by trips to Reading and QPR. Then the Wickham Carabao Cup, the third round game away from home. They're in League One, of course, nowadays. Then it's Wigan at home, then Derby away midweek, and then Stoke at home. And then we go back into another international break. So it's going to be an intense period, and you know, if it doesn't go well, like Pad says, then there's a 2 week period there where if there is a decision that needs to be made, then it's going to be there. There's going to be a chance for fans to put pressure on in that break if that's where we end up. But let's hope we don't have to go down that road. Looking back at this game, I feel like I've asked this question, or we talked about this ahead of every Norwich game this season. Should they go to a three at the back, considering you're playing against such a good team? I mean, they did lose Adama Traore to Wolves, who was one of their serious threats because he's absolutely rapid. But they don't seem to be playing sort of Pulis ball Stoke style, do they? They seem to at least have a bit of attacking flair to them, but just because of the players that they've got in there. So, yeah, just with it being such a tough one, would you consider going three at the back for this, Mark?
I would, yeah. I'm not sure if Farker will. I don't think he's been knocked out of his stride enough with the 4-1-4-1 formation enough this season to deviate from that just yet. I think if Norwich got tonked by Middlesbrough as they did against Leeds, then he would look to adjust his thinking. But I don't think he will. I think he'll stick with his 4-1-4-1.
He's caught between a rock and a hard place, isn't he? Because everyone said, you've got to score more goals, got the defence sorted. But now, if you look in today's paper, I've had a look at the sort of championship-wide statistics, and it's only QPR have conceded more goals than Norwich so far this season, and I was a bit shocked by that. But clearly, that's got to improve. I mean, if they fall behind in the first half to Borough, then clearly Carrow Road's going to be an easy place. I just think that for that first half, just keep it safe. Go through it at the back, make sure you get through, and just try and nick this one. I mean, everyone would snap your hand off for a 1-0 win right now, wouldn't they?
All day long, yeah, all day long. I mean, whenever the three is put to him this season, he always caveats it with, you then take away something from the top end of the pitch. But ultimately, those stats that you've collated would indicate that you're not going to get anything from games if you're leaking goals with that alarming regularity and in that quantity as well. So, as much as they're quite keen to move away from the idea that there's any parallels between this time last season, which of course was just off the back of the Millwall hammering when Grant Hanley arrived, and then they did embark on a far more solid looking outfit formation wise, that is a parallel, because you know, if you're going into every game and you need to score two or more to get anything out of it, then to me the balance is completely wrong. So he might, as you rightly say there, have to sacrifice, and again go down the same route he went down this time last year, and just sacrifice a period of very difficult to beat, don't give away too many goals, and have enough quality in their ranks to pinch something and then defend it. But the only thing with that, of course, was the guy who was pinching things was more often not James Maddison, and unfortunately they don't have him to call on this time round. So, but yeah, I personally would think, whether it's a personnel, whether it's formation, whether it's just a mindset, focus on the back end of the pitch for the foreseeable, and then we'll worry about, you know, the front end embellishments if we can get the solid base.
We shall see. It's going to be a defining period one way or the other, I think it's fairly safe to say. I think that's us done for today. Thanks Mark and Paddy for joining us. Thank you to you all for listening. Remember pinker.com for all the latest Norwich City news, analysis, opinion and transfer insight. Of course we'll have all that build up to the Borough game from Friday onwards, and then at Carrow Road on Saturday to let you know what's going on before, during and after the game. We'll be with you every Monday, so make sure you get in touch and get involved. This is your podcast as much as it is ours. Cheers.